Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Hu Hong from the National University of Singapore. I want to share our work, Automatic Generation of Data-Oriented Exploits. This is a joint work with Zheng Longchua, Shenzhou Adrian, Pradik Skushina, and Zheng Kailiang. So once we have a vulnerable program, attackers always want to build exploits. The common ways are control flow attacks. For example, the code injection attacks will place code in data region and directly jump to it. So this one enables a large exploit space for attackers. I want to use this rectangle to represent the exploit space. Also, the code reuse attack will divert the control flow to existing code region. For example, the return to libc attack, return-oriented programming. So this one enlarges the exploit space. To mitigate the damage, researchers propose a lot of defense mechanisms. For example, data execution prevention disable code injection attacks, so it changes the exploit space to be protected. Also, code flow, control flow integrity, in principle, can block all control flow hijacking attacks. So with these defense mechanisms, there are still methods to build attacks. For example, the control flow binding attacks just talked. But in fact, we agree that the control flow attacks are getting more and more difficult to generate. In fact, these attacks and defense mechanisms happen in the control plane of the program, which is very crowded, and the exploit space is getting more and more smaller. If we jump out of this plane, we can find another plane, actually, the plane of data. In this space, most of the exploit space is not explored yet. So we call this exploit data-oriented exploits. So the known exploits in this way will corrupt security critical data. They will not touch the control flow at all. So these exploits have shown significant damage to real-world programs. For example, in the WFTP program, if attackers corrupt this UID variable, they can obtain the highest root privilege. In the recent attack against the IE, if attackers can corrupt even one byte of this safe mode flag, they can silently load the arbitrary code in the IE process for execution. So these attacks are powerful and severe. But we want to ask the question, what are the left space in the data plane? And is there any concrete ways to make us reach this space? So in our work, we propose a new class of data-oriented exploits. Instead, it reuses the data flows in the program to build attacks. This one will significantly enlarge the exploit space in the data plane. To build such exploit, we propose data flow staging, a systematic way to build these data-oriented exploits attack the vulnerable program. So by applying our approach on real-world programs, we built 19 exploits from 8 vulnerabilities. 16 of them are previously unknown to public. Next, I'm going to show how to build such attacks. So let's first check this simple web server program. So this code first loads the private key from the file into memory and establishes the secure channel with the client. This is the data flow of the private key. So the red arrow here means the pointer relationship. This is the pointer, this is the data pointed. So then the program handles the user request for files. It first retrieves the file name, gets the absolute path, extracts the file content. Finally, it concatenates the file name and the file content as the output buffer and send it back to the client. So to make it simple, I want to cut some data flows here. So you can see during the normal execution, these two data flows, the data flow of the private key and the data flow of the file name are disjointed. There is no intersection between them. However, there is a stack buffer flow on line 11, which means the variables on stack after this full pass buffer can be corrupted by attackers, including this pointer file name. So if attackers change the value of file name to make it pointer to the private key, then the content of the private key will be copied into the output buffer and sent back to the malicious users. So you can see the ways to build attacks is actually connect existing data flows in the normal execution. Based on this observation, we propose data flow staging and manipulate data flows in the program to build attacks, as shown in the previous example. So this one enables a systematic way to generate data-oriented exploits. It takes the vulnerable program's binary and some sample input as its own input. And finally, it will output some data-oriented exploits. So these exploits either leak sensitive information, for example, the password or private keys, or they help attackers obtain extra privileges. Notice it's non-trivial to build such attacks. So first, we need to keep the control flow at the same as the normal execution. Also, we need to prevent program crash due to memory error. Further, we don't have much knowledge of the randomized value deployed by the defense mechanisms, for example, the CFI tags or randomized addresses. Actually, the main challenge comes from the large search space to find a possible exploit. So I'll give one example here. These are two data flows, one selected as a source flow, another one selected as a target flow. So the search space to connect these two flows actually is a Cartesian product of the vertex site in the source flow and the vertex site in the target flow. So this is one candidate from vertex V1 to V2. So for each candidate, we require a heavy analysis to verify. This is stitchable or not. So to solve this problem, we propose to use memory error influence to quickly field out the infeasible candidate. And then we use SIMD solver to generate a concrete input to verify this is possible. So this is the method we use to generate the text. First one is a single edge stitch. It will corrupt the security critical data. This is a WFTPT program I just mentioned. The critical data is the user ID used by the set UID function. So I'm going to use this two-dimensional data flow graph to draw the data flow of the user ID. So on the x-axis is the time dimension, which means the execution order of the program. On the y-axis is the memory address space. So during the normal execution, at line 3, the program gets the user ID variable. Then it saves this variable in the password structure at line 4. Then at line 9, it puts the variable on stack for the use of a set UID function. So this is a data flow graph of the user ID variable. So we are going to find the location to mount the text. This is a memory error at line 5. This is a format string vulnerability. So to quickly find the location to mount the text, we consider the error, the influence of the memory error. We draw the influence on the same graph as this red line. So on time dimension, this line means the memory error happens at line 5. On address dimension, this means the memory error can be used to influence almost the full memory space. We decompose the data flow into two dimensions. So in time dimension, this means the program believes the user ID variable is unchanged from time 4 to time 9. In the address dimension, this means at time 9, the program will retrieve the value of user ID and save it on stack. You can see this intersection between the time dimension data flow and the memory error. Actually, this is the location we're going to use to mount the text. So we use the memory error to change the value from the normal user ID to the root user ID. The program believes this value is unchanged and use it as the parameter for set UID. So in this way, we can build this privilege escalation text. And memory error help us to locate the location to mount the text quickly. So other than this single edge stitch, we can also see that at line 9, the user ID is dereferenced from a pointer. The pointer is usually decides the data movement direction. So we propose this pointer stitch algorithm, which corrupts the pointer to connect the data flows. So we draw the data flow of the same program again, but with only two nodes here. We bring the pointer node into the graph. And also we introduce another data flow of 1-0 during the normal execution for later usage. So similarly, we decompose the data flow into two dimensions, also for the pointer relationship. So for this one, the time dimension means the program believes the pointer's value are unchanged from time 2 to time 9. And at time 9, the program will use the pointer to find the source and copy it to the destination. Similarly, we can decompose other data flows. So we draw the memory error influence again on the same graph. Previously, we showed that using this intersection, we can mount single edge stitch attacks. But in this case, we consider another intersection between the pointer data flow and the memory error influence. So if we use the memory error to change this value to a value of B2, the program believes this value is unchanged from time 2 to time 9. So at time 9, they will use this value to find the source and copy it to a destination. So you can see, we mount the privilege escalation attack again by corrupting a pointer instead of corrupting the data directly. So if we simplify this graph, it will be like this. So pointer stitch corrupt pointer VP. If the program dereferences point VP one time, you get the interesting data. So let's think a little bit more on this direction. This is the original data flow graph of the user ID. So if we check the data flow of the pointer, say we can find a pointer of the pointer, so we can build more intuition attacks. So first we find the data flow of the address B2. By corrupting the pointer, we can indirectly change the pointer's value. And later, by changing this pointer's value, we can indirectly change the UID's value. So in this way, we stitch two data flows, the data flow of the address and the user ID and this zero. So we call this attack two-level stitch. It corrupts the pointer VP2. If the program dereference VP2 two times, it will get the interesting data, the target or the source of attacks. So more generally, we define this N-level stitch. It corrupts the pointer VPN. If the program dereference VPN N times, it will get the interesting target or source data. To achieve this, we need to recursively invoke pointer stitch N times. And also, we need to be careful that we need to guarantee the stitch alignment. That means if you want to change the value of VPN to VPN prime, you need to make sure that if the program dereferences VPN prime N times, it will get the corresponding source of vertex data. And also, we have this multi-flow stitching, which means we involve a lot of intermediate flows. And finally, the source flow and the target flow can be stitched through a long data flow stitching chain involving the intermediate data flows. So you can see there are a lot of ways to build these data-oriented exploits other than the data corruption. However, in this case, we need to know the address of some vertex in advance. So randomization will bring a problem in this case. To solve this problem, we propose address reuse to bypass ASRR. So one observation is that even when module is randomized, the relative address within the module is still fixed. If attackers can corrupt this relative address, he can still reuse the randomized base address. For example, in this assembly code, attackers control this EX register, which is the index register. So they can reuse this base address in ESI and EDI to perform attacks. Another observation is that the randomized address is frequently saved in memory. So if attackers can retrieve this randomized address from memory at runtime, they can totally bypass ASR. So we have this complete reuse. So in this assembly code, attackers can retrieve the value of EBX from memory at runtime. So they can use this address to perform memory read or memory write. So this example is similar to previous one. Attackers corrupt the user ID from the normal one to the root user ID. So during this attack, attackers can find the randomized address of user ID from the stack, and they just provide a malicious format string to this vsprintf function. So make this function find the randomized address of user ID from stack and use it for the memory corruption. So this attack can bypass even the fine-grained implementation of ASRR. Another way to make the stitch work is to build attacks within the deterministic memory region. So in the current implementation of ASR, there are still a lot of memory loaded into fixed memory address. For example, on Linux, most of the binaries are not compiled with this -PAE option. So a lot of programs still have a large fixed memory region. So this is the size of a fixed memory region, and this is the number of programs have this size of a fixed memory region. Actually, you can find a lot of programs has a large fixed memory region. Similarly, on Windows platform, we can always find these libraries that are not compatible with ASR. So if you can build attacks in these libraries, we can just ignore ASR. We implement the data flow stitching in prototype called flow stitch. It takes the vulnerable binary and some sample input of this binary. So at least one input shows the memory error, another one shows the normal behavior of the program. So flow stitch takes this input. First, it will generate the execution trees of this memory error and a normal execution. So the error exhibiting trees is used to find the memory error influence and the constraint to reach the memory error. The binary trees is used to find the critical data and also the data flows. So we feed this information into the data flow stitching algorithm we just discussed. The algorithm outputs some candidate exploits. So we use SME solver to generate a concrete exploit to verify this is a really stitchable. So finally, flow stitch will output the data-oriented exploits. So we apply our approach on real-world programs, including the web servers, file servers, and site UID programs. So finally, we build 19 exploits from these 8 vulnerabilities, including information leakage attacks and also privilege escalation attacks. so 16 of them are previously unknown to public. 7 exploits are built from advanced staging algorithm, for example, two-level stage. 10 of them can work with ASR. 8 build attacks within the deterministic memory region, and 2 of them reuse the randomized address in memory. We evaluate the performance of our tool, basically specifically for the trace generation and the data flow generation. So on average, it takes 6.5 minutes to generate one exploit. The data flow generation, it takes a long time. Now we have a faster version. So let's look into some concrete examples. So the GHTTP web server has a stack buffer flow. These are the related source code and assembly code. So you can see this pointer PTR pointing to this URL provided by users. Register ESI is allocated for this pointer. So first, the program has some checks to avoid dot dot in the request. Then it logs the request and executes the command in the URL. So this is a buffer flow vulnerability in the log function. So also the pointer ESI is pushed down stack and popped from stack during the entry and exit of the function. And also this ESI is used as argument to the exec system call later. So previous work discussed the exploit to corrupt this ESI on stack, which is a pointer of this URL. However, this one does not work anymore, since if we compile GHTTPD with a new version of compiler, the code changed. That means after the log function, the program will retrieve the value of ESI from stack again. So instead, we build a two-level stage. That means we corrupt the pointer of URL to build a tag. Also, this is another interesting tag, shows that if you want to limit the lifespan of the sensitive data, it is challenging. So first, the SHD program uses the hashed key to verify to authenticate the user. So it first uses a library call to get the hashed key and save it in heap. So this is dangerous. SSHD function, the program will copy the hashed key into the stack and use it locally. So this is a stack copy of the hashed key. So later, the main function of the SSHD, the operation inside this SSD will overwrite the stack copy. So this is part is clear. However, the heap copy is just released from the memory, but it's not cleaned. So it's still possible for our stage attack. So this shows that it is challenging to make it correct, since the programmers need to care about this memory allocation deallocation in the library and maybe third-party programs. So in conclusion, we explore the risk category of data-oriented exploits. We explore the single stage, pointer stage, in-level stage, multi-flow stage, so many methods. And also we propose data flow staging, a systematic way to generate data-oriented exploits. So these exploits can bypass control flow integrity, data execution prevention, and often it works with ASR. And we show that automatic construction of the data-oriented exploits are possible. Okay, thanks. That's all. Yeah, I'm ready for questions.
Questions for our speaker? All right. You don't have to run. It's okay. We have time.
Okay, Chen Yizong from Georgia Tech. I have a few questions.
Sure.
The first, I think the most important one is how do you find the data you want to overwrite?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Maybe I can answer it, and you can have another question. Okay, so we have inside our tool, we use this binary trees to find the critical data and generate data flow of it. We have some general ways to find the critical data. For example, we use, yes.
So basically, how do you know that I should overwrite something that they're going to set UID and all those critical data? Because there's so many data in the program, right? How do you find or distinguishing from which data is critical?
Actually, we predefine a list of critical data.
Okay.
For example, the data used by this system calls or data used by this critical function to retrieve hashed keys, something like that. And also, we predefine the goals for this critical data.
Okay. The second one is I think you use, because you are based on trees, so the data flow is built on dynamic execution, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of, okay. But basically, it's only based on trees, so sometimes you cannot find the target data flow you want, although it may exhibiting the binary, but your current binary input cannot generate the corresponding trees for that. So you will fail to find the data flow, right?
Yeah, this is a coverage problem of current method. So okay. If the data exists in this execution trees, we'll find it. But if it's not shown in this execution trees, we'll miss it. Yeah.
So have you considered doing like static data flow analysis?
Yes, static way is the future work of our method.
Okay, I think I had another one, but I forget. Maybe
we can ask when you remember it.
Yeah, Thorsten Holz, Ruhr University, Bochum. How expressive are your exploits? So are they Turing complete, or can you just modify specific values in memory?
Whether it's Turing complete or not is not very clear. So we are trying to build a text in that way. So currently, it's depending on the availability of critical data and also the availability of the memory error in the program. Yes.
And coming back to the previous question, so how much manual effort is actually required to build such an exploit? So you need to specify which memory location you're interested in overwriting, or
actually,
the starting point?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, we predefine a set of critical data. So this is a way to find the critical data inside of this execution trees. And then we first try this ASR bypass method to find the critical data and build a text that bypass ASR first. If this knows this interesting data in the deterministic memory region or cannot be bypassed using this address reuse, then we assume this ASR is turned off and build a text for this concrete execution.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, I remember that. So what is do you have any requests or requirement for the vulnerability, or your SMT solver will automatically figure this out? Like, I guess some buffer overflow don't allow you to overwrite arbitrary memory, right? You can only, like, off by one, only allow you to overwrite one byte.
Yes. So this method will try the best to find exploit. So for some concrete memory errors, for example, overwrite by one or something like that, it's possible we cannot find any solutions to build a text. So that's why we will draw the memory error influence on the same graph and find a possible stage.
No, but whether you can find or not, do you have, requirement for the vulnerability to say it has to be give me arbitrary memory write? Then I can use this vulnerability, or your SMT solver can say it can give me any vulnerability, and I will say if this can overwrite or not.
Currently, we do not have any requirement on the vulnerability. So at most, I think if the vulnerability, the memory error influence is quite limited, the result is auto cannot generate the data flow staging attack.
Okay, thank you.
So you talk about how to defeat a address layout randomization. So
yes.
Have you ever taken into account more advanced randomization techniques like fine-grained memory randomization? Like there's a paper published in the last year's USENIX called, or the year before last, called Oxymoron, which can randomize a single module, which changes the relative offset of the instructions in the same module. So have you ever taken into that account or similar techniques? So assuming those are in deployment, are your techniques, is your technique still effective, or that would be a problem?
Okay, that is a very good question. So to bypass the SR, we have proposed two methods. First one is the partial reuse. This one requests based on the implementation of the ASR. So this one assumes the relative address within one module is still fixed. So if you use this fine-grained ASR or use periodically ASR, this one would not work. But I think this method will work even for the fine-grained ASR, as I just mentioned. So this one will retrieve the randomized value from address at runtime and use it for the memory corruption.
So I think that's based on the assumption there will be some memory disclosure vulnerability you can make use of.
That depends. For example, in this case, this offset is actually fixed. So the text will pre-calculate this offset and feed this vulnerable format string so they can retrieve this value. So they don't need to use any information leakage attacks.
Right, but that also depends on the type of the vulnerability, which can allows you to make use of the relative offset.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, if there's no more questions, let's thank our speaker.